We are privileged to be with Martin Indyk, who is the former United States Ambassador to Israel. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. Ambassador, you were saying of Henry Kissinger, I am no fan of Henry Kissinger, and he appears to have said something right when he said that Israel, of which we have spoken very little, doesn't do foreign policy, they do domestic politics. Right. Did I get that correctly?
Exactly right.
The Israeli part of this, it's very easy to say, well, you know, you guys are sounding like you're taking sides. Well, there are positions that need to be understood on all counts, including that of the state of Israel. Mm. And we're now at 60 years since that state was established. The reality is this is hard for everybody. What is it that the Israelis can contribute? You were talking about Gaza. I was thinking before we started, Gaza.
Right.
How is it that we've been unable to take the people that you very clearly say Bill Clinton was arguing as an ally of Israel? How do we, if we are interested with people who genuinely want peace, how do we begin to stake out a place where everybody can have that when those who clearly don't want it and profit from the mayhem are the ones who can kick it all off the road to a better place?
Well, I mean, first of all, we need to be realistic and recognize that Barack Obama looks at the landscape. It's changed for the worse in a lot of dramatic ways compared to when Bill Clinton and I, as his advisor, came in to the White House in 1993. You know, then all the Arab states were at the negotiating table with Israel. As I said, we had dominant influence. The Palestinians were there too. And Rabin had been elected with a mandate to make peace. Now we've got an Israeli election in Israel that's likely to produce a center-right government. The reason for that is that the Israeli people have become quite disillusioned with the idea of peacemaking. I know this is hard for people to understand, but their narrative is that they pulled out unilaterally from Gaza, they dismantled all of those settlements, and what do they get in return? Rocket fire into Israel proper. And so they think, okay, we're going to have a peace process now in which we have to get out of the West Bank, which, by the way, most of them recognize that they don't want to be there, but they sure as hell don't want to repeat the experience of Gaza and have rockets being fired from the West Bank across the border, and it's only a couple of kilometers into Ben-Gurion International Airport or the heart of Tel Aviv. So they, on the one hand, I think they will be willing to support a territorial compromise in which the Palestinian state is established in, you know, 95% of the West Bank and all of Gaza. But they're not going to support that unless they know that that territory, when they pull the Israeli army out, is going to be controlled by a responsible, capable partner. And the problem there is that the responsible, capable partner, which was supposed to be the Palestinian Authority, has, through these years of conflict in which the United States stood on the sidelines and watched, has been so disintegrated. Its governing institutions have been so weakened. Its security forces have been, you know, most of them went over to fighting Israel in cadres, terrorist cadres and so on. They've got to rebuild everything now. And now they've got to do it in Gaza as well.
You talk about setting the environment is the one thing that the United States can do, that we, and then imagine, leave the details to the people who have to live with them. Mm. What's that environment of which you speak?
Well, there's first of all the broad strategic environment in the region, which affects the calculus of the leaders there. And the broad strategic environment is both dangerous and yet it has opportunities. Dangerous because the Iranians are set on acquiring nuclear weapons capability. It certainly seems that way. They are backing Hamas, Hezbollah, that say to the Arab people and beyond to the Muslim world, we have a way to redeem Palestine. It's through violence, terrorism, defiance of the international community. And that context, made even more complicated by Iran's nuclear program, is a very negative one for peacemaking. But at the same time, those Arab leaders who also sat on the sidelines in the 1990s when we were trying to make peace with Arafat, now feel that their situation is becoming quite shaky. They have to show that there's an alternative, that peacemaking under American auspices with Israel can redeem Palestine much more effectively. And, so that's Obama has to, you know, he's going to reach out to the Iranians and try to head off their nuclear program through diplomacy. I think he has to reach out to the Syrians as well, who are interested in making peace with Israel, and bring them into the circle of peace to the extent that's possible. That will put the Iranians in a situation, the Syrians are allied to them, where they will feel a little nervous about being isolated. They won't feel so much that the wind is at their backs at that point. And if at the same time he's reaching out to the Iranians, he may be able to create a certain symbiosis there, where the Syrians are worried that the Iranians are going to make a deal, the Iranians are worried that the Syrians are going to make a deal, but at the same time we need to be moving on the Palestinian track. So that's what I mean by creating the strategic context.
And you haven't even spoken of the Sunni Shiite Persian Arab underlying predicates, all of which really matter.
Right, exactly right. I mean, you put your finger on it in terms of this conflict now has metastasized. So now it operates on at least three levels between Israelis and Arabs, Israel and Palestinians in particular, between Arabs and Arabs, between the radical Arabs of Hamas and Hezbollah, backed by the Muslim Brotherhood, and the moderate Arabs of King Hussein, King Abdullah of Jordan, and King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, and Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. And then on the Arab-Iranian level, which is also an overlay of a Sunni-Shia conflict. So you know, where do you begin? How do you affect all of those things? But it's to understand you're essentially playing chess on a three-dimensional chessboard.
And
what you do in one area can affect what you do in the other areas in a positive way, not just a negative way.
The late condensed matter physicist Per Bach.
Thank you for that, Bill.
Pointed out that condensed matter physicists live in their own little universe, but he said, you know, physics has reached a point, and this goes to the clockwork universe, we've reached a point where the equations are not enough. We have to do narrative. Mm. And you used the word narrative earlier in describing one perspective, but it seems that part of the challenge in this is you've got all of these narratives going on, and a narrative they are both fixed, but they're also dynamic. And we, I think Americans, tend to assume that there's a national narrative. And we've created these artificial entities. The British and the French created these entities in the Middle East. And we assume that there is a Syrian perspective, that there is an Iranian perspective, that there's a Jewish perspective. And what you have is, you've got a religious cut across that, and then you've got sects within those religions. You've got a national piece, you have an economic piece, you've got a political piece. There are all these various pieces, and they're all moving all the time. I think three dimensions is...
you should be a strangerist. 11 dimensions.
Yeah, 11 dimensions, it's sort of the warm-up for that. But it seems that part of the challenge for anybody who's going to engage is to stay on top of those narratives, which is a non-trivial undertaking. But if we try trivializing it, we can't be effective.
What you have, in a sense, it's a kaleidoscope. That if you turn it, it keeps on changing.
Right.
The pattern keeps on changing. But I'm going to mix my metaphors here. It's like a weather forecasting in a way. You've got all all these different currents and highs and lows and it's very hard to predict the weather, except when a dominant front comes in and it rearranges things. And that's what we are here. The United States is...
It's a low-pressure system.
Right. Or a high-pressure system.
Or a high-pressure system.
But it, you know, it. So when we come in with, you know, here's Barack Obama coming in wanting to make peace, wanting to reach out to the Iranians, and I think also bring the Syrians in, wanting to draw down our forces in Iraq. So it's an immensely complicated effort, but we are acting. We're not sitting back and just watching this. We are now engaged in a very aggressive is the wrong word, but activist way. And everybody is going to make their own calculations about how to respond to this. And that's where, as you say, stay on top of the narratives. We have to stay very carefully attuned to what they're saying to us. I love the way that Obama said in that first interview he gave, you know, we want to listen and not just talk. I mean, George W. Bush was really focused on, you know, this message of his was, it's our way or the highway. It's, you know, you're with us or against us. Obama wants to send a very different message. That's really important. And you see how he shakes things up. The Iranian leader, Ahmadinejad, who made his reputation on railing against the United States, suddenly saying, well, maybe we should talk to the United States. I don't trust him at all, but it's an example of the way in which these guys over there have to think, okay, now how am I going to deal with this superpower when it's coming in actively? Bibi Netanyahu, right? He may be the next prime minister of Israel.
Yeah,
he's got to figure, okay, Obama wants to make peace. Now my politics, as you were saying, my politics are not going to allow me to make concessions on territorial concessions on the West Bank. I've got to find a way to deal with this superpower. The Israeli people are going to punish me if I don't manage Obama effectively. So what am I going to do? My guess? You go off and make peace with the Syrians.
And a good guess it may well be, coming from a former United States ambassador to Israel, Martin Indyk, who will be with us when we return in just a moment.